for at least 10 days. Travel to and from high-risk cities will be banned, and non-essential businesses have to roll down their shutters. Schools, entertainment centers, and all public places will also be closed. Officials have avoided a total lockdown in Tehran, arguing that the capital city accommodates major national and international activities. The closures come amid a new wave of infections across Iran, which is believed to be the UK variant of COVID-19, entering the country from neighboring Iraq.
The first reason why our hospitals are once again overwhelmed with COVID-19 patients is the fact that British variant of the virus slipped into our country through our Khuzestan and Iran borders with Iraq. Now we are unfortunately faced with a fourth wave of the pandemic.
Authorities blame the new spike on the two-week traveling spree during the Persian New Year holidays, which started on March 21st. The number of confirmed coronavirus cases in Iran has passed the 2 million mark, and the total fatalities have surpassed 64,000. Vaccination of the most vulnerable groups of the society is underway in Iran with Russian-made Sputnik V vaccine. But the country is yet to launch a nationwide vaccination program. The government hopes to kickstart mass inoculation in 2 months, using its own homegrown jabs.
While vaccines have also come in the ring to join the fight against COVID-19, the virus is still hard to knock out. Health officials advise everyone to take the new restrictions seriously. As they say, chances of survival are much lower for those who get infected with the UK variant of the coronavirus. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Dates, one of the fruits of paradise in Islamic tradition. With their paper-thin skin and juicy, sweet flesh, they have pride of place, especially on Muslim dinner tables.
Walk into any halal shop or indeed any supermarket here in the UK and you're bound to see dates on display. They come from many different places, including from Palestinian territories. And during Ramadan, they simply fly off the shelf. But could the Muslims living here in Britain, by taking dates to break their fast during the holy month, be unknowingly supporting the brutal Israeli occupation of Palestinians?
We put that question to the head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, an NGO running a campaign to boycott Israeli dates in the UK, now Israel's third target market.
They were breaking their fast on a date which is being grown on stolen land, which is actually even unlawful to break your fast with something which is haram.
Israel is one of the world's top five exporters of dates. In 2018, the UK was Israel's largest market for dates worth more than $25 million. Over half of those are grown in illegal settlements, ruled by the United Nations, the International Court of Justice, and several other international organizations as illegal and built on stolen Palestinian land. Not only that, Israeli settlers are set to employ low-paid Palestinian laborers, among them children, to do the back-breaking job of picking the dates. But how are Muslims and non-Muslim Palestinian rights activists to ensure that the dates they're eating are not from the illegal Israeli settlements?
Israelis, instead of coming out and saying product of Israel, they are hiding the identity of the dates. Packages like this, you know, Al-Malik, you know, a Muslim name, Arabic writing, product of Palestine. But when you look, you realize it's a con because there is no company importer or distributor attached to this.
This year's call to boycott Israeli dates subscribes to the mission of the Global Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions Movement that works to end international support for Israel's oppression of Palestinians and pressure Israel to comply with international law.
We were in Britain number one importer of Israeli dates. Last year we informed everyone that we have become second, and this year we have become third. And at the same time, Palestinian dates are being sort of supported and imported more.
This Ramadan, when Muslims in Britain break their fast with dates, they'll be wise to ask themselves if the dates they're eating are helping ease the suffering of Palestinians or are they going towards oppressing them. Saeed Purizza, London.
A
A shock end to the week as British royal Prince Philip, the husband of Queen Elizabeth II, was pronounced dead on Friday. Just hours after the news broke, mourners began gathering to lay flowers for the late Duke of Edinburgh, who was the longest-serving consort in British history.
Following the death of such a prominent member of the royal family, British media, particularly the BBC, appear to have gone into whitewash overdrive, portraying the prince as some kind of charitable war hero, whilst totally glossing over his various disgraces, including his numerous racist outbursts and his support for colonialism.
Both headlines and government statements were awash with complimentary tributes. But British social media reacted very differently, with Black and Irish Twitter hashtags going viral, two groups competing to mock the royals' scandal-ridden legacy.
His record is incredibly checkered. He has indulged in numerous racist outbursts, and has indeed been a champion of British colonialism.
He said, for instance, back in 2002, a group of Indigenous Australians, on a visit to see them with the Queen, he asked them, "Do you still throw spears at each other?"
The British monarchy represents everything bad in their history, and so quite understandably, they have a different viewpoint on his death and what it means.
He said, "If you stay here much longer, you will all be slitty-eyed." That's what he told British exchange students who lived in Xi'an in 1986.
The prince had a bad habit of offending minorities, but also represented detested British imperialist values.
If we're going to swear an oath of allegiance to anybody, it should be an oath of allegiance to the people, that elect us. We're all living in a democracy. We shouldn't be swearing an oath of allegiance, it seems to me, to a unelected monarchy.
150,000 COVID dead, 10 years of austerity, 120,000 of the most vulnerable and poor people dead. That's who I shed a tear from.
For now, the flag at the palace has been lowered, and on Monday, Parliament will honour the Duke with further tributes. But no matter how hard the establishment ignore it, the British royal legacy is tarnished. Robert Carter, London.
A joint commission session between Iran and the remaining signatories of the nuclear deal known as the JCPOA comes to an end in Vienna. Iran's lead delegate, Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi, says Iran's demand is clear. It will only come back to full compliance with the agreement after the U.S. lifts sanctions imposed, reimposed, or relabeled following the U.S. withdrawal from the JCPOA. And Iran will also want to verify the sanctions lifting.
What we mean by verification is to see the effects of sanctions lifting in practice. So it is not enough for the U.S. to sign, waivers or, executive orders, whatever. Yes, they have to officially sign, but what matters for us is to see the effect of sanction lifting on the ground.
China's representative said the sides are narrowing down their differences. He said Beijing believes all the nuclear-related unilateral U.S. sanctions are illegal and should be lifted immediately to safeguard the JCPOA. The demand to lift all sanctions at once is a legitimate one, he said.
We think it's legitimate for them to lift it all at once, and it's an important issue.
But will they do it?
They have undertaken to do it. But we say that they must put it into action, turn their commitments into action.
Araghchi said he believes it is possible to get the job done sooner rather than later, but it depends on how willing and serious the other side is. After 3 days of intensive discussions within two working groups, the delegates agreed the talks are moving in the right direction. The Joint Commission will meet again on Wednesday amid hopes to maintain momentum. Homa Leski, Vienna.
Turkey has reported an unprecedented surge of daily coronavirus cases. The new infections stood at almost 55,000 on Wednesday, as the highest in the country since the outbreak of the pandemic last year. Turkish government plans to reduce the numbers during the upcoming holy month of Ramadan to welcome tourists again after the month. Turkish president said that he wants to see a significant reduction in the number of coronavirus infections by the end of Ramadan, as he announced last week that during the holy month, restaurants and coffee shops' work will be limited to takeout and delivery services only. Meanwhile, Turkey will continue to witness a daily curfew from 9 p.m. till 5 a.m. and total weekend lockdowns.
We aim to give a rest to our country during Ramadan and prepare it for better days after the Eid. If we could decrease the number of the cases to thousands, we will be able to catch the tourism season that is understood to be opened in May and the commercial activity that will be created by the tourism season.
Turkish Health Minister Fahrettin Koca said earlier that 75% of the new coronavirus cases in the country are from the more contagious variant detected in Britain. This as the country is still open for tourists who are not included in the curfew and lockdown measures. Some analysts believe the latest measures is the reason behind the sudden increase in the new cases.
We expected to see a spread of the virus amid the third wave. However, we didn't expect to see such high numbers, especially after we began public vaccination. Turkish government's trying to create a balance between people's health and economy. That's why it's trying to implement measures to contain the spread of the virus until at least 60% of the country is vaccinated.
Turkey is pressing ahead with its nationwide vaccination campaign using the Sinovac and Pfizer-BioNTech's vaccine shots. So far, more than 10.55 million people have been given the first doses, and 7.41 million were given the second. Turkey's announcement of a nationwide lockdown during the holy month of Ramadan has created chaos, which is seen by many as the reason behind the increasing number of daily infections. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Since Joe Biden took office in the U.S., relations between Washington and Moscow have only spiraled downwards. The Biden administration has signaled a more confrontational approach towards Russia. It has already hit Moscow with economic sanctions over the jailing of Russian opposition figure Alexei Navalny. Washington has also threatened unspecified action over an alleged massive cyber attack, which it blames on Russia. Tensions have risen particularly after Biden publicly stated that he thinks Putin is a killer. Now, the Russian government says it will respond in kind to any new U.S. sanctions amid reports that the White House is about to announce further bans against Russia. This time, the source of tensions is the conflict in eastern Ukraine. Over the past 2 weeks, mainstream Western media outlets have been reporting about an increase in Russia's military presence along its borders with Ukraine. This coincides with reports of renewed clashes between Ukrainian troops and pro-Russian forces in eastern Ukraine, leaving a ceasefire in the region effectively dead. Ukraine, the US and NATO accused Russia of sending troops and heavy weaponry to prop up militias in the region. But the Kremlin says there is nothing to fear, describing the repositioning of Russian armed units as a domestic issue. Analysts believe Russia's military buildup along the border with Ukraine is a response to Kiev's saber-rattling.
This buildup of Russian troops is actually, to the contrary, it is in response to saber-rattling by Ukraine that is being instigated by the United States and in the form of NATO.
The notion that Russia is responding to Ukraine's escalation does not seem far from reality. Some observers believe Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who is in a weak position at home, is playing the anti-Russian card to appease the nationalist population and mobilize support in the West. They cite a recent crackdown on pro-Russia media and figures, as well as Zelensky's public call on NATO to speed up Ukraine's membership plan. The Kremlin, which has repeatedly voiced concern over NATO's eastward expansion, bitterly opposes the notion that Ukraine could someday join the Western military alliance. After all, Biden has been one of Kiev's staunchest supporters since before the outbreak of the conflict in eastern Ukraine in 2014. This week, Biden himself pledged unwavering support to the Ukrainian government. It remains to be seen how far the new U.S. administration is ready to go in its confrontational path on Russia. If the current trajectory continues, soon we will see a full-scale war of sanctions between the two governments at the least.
World Health Day is celebrated on the 7th of April every year. For 2021, the theme is Building a Fair, Healthier World. For Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, health inequities are an everyday reality that is rooted in Israel's long-held apartheid regime. Tel Aviv has waged three wars on the blockaded enclave and maintains a crippling blockade on it since 2007. During the 2014 war on Gaza, Israeli forces attacked 17 hospitals and 56 health centers. The Israeli regime's inhumane practices have led to a state of de-development within Gaza's healthcare system, making it extremely hard for health workers to combat the coronavirus pandemic.
The Israeli blockade in place over the past 14 years has battered the entire health system in the Gaza Strip. Hospitals and medical centers suffer from acute shortages in medicines and medical equipment, especially amid the rapid spread of the coronavirus pandemic.
This year's World Health Day comes amid a surge in coronavirus infections in the Gaza Strip. Despite the increasing number of coronavirus infections in the impoverished enclave, the Israeli regime continues to place tight restrictions on the entry of humanitarian supplies, including medical equipment.
On this day, we confirmed that the epidemiological situation in the Gaza Strip is very dangerous, and the curve of infections continues to increase. Everyone must take the necessary measures to safeguard their families. We also call on all concerned local and international parties to help us in fighting the pandemic.
Under international laws and norms, the Israeli regime must ensure medical supplies to Palestinians, including combating the spread of pandemics. Experts warn that the health sector in Gaza could soon collapse unless serious steps are made to remedy the situation. On World Health Day, the regime's blockade continues to undermine efforts by health workers in Gaza to provide proper medical care. This is while the situation has worsened in the besieged enclave due to the coronavirus pandemic. Ashraf Shara, Gaza.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Answering it down some questions and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah هو ذا الرحمن
Allah
هو ذا المنان
لا إله إلا.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum and welcome to yet another edition from series of Q&A in Islamic Beliefs from IRIB English Radio. In these series of shows, we are trying to ask and answer some doubts and misconceptions which is usually being asked by different questioners in theological and Islamic issues. So for this series of shows, we have been inviting scholars and researchers from Qom Seminary Schools. Like always, we have Sheikh Murtada Karimi in the studio with us, and we shall start our questions with him. But before starting the discussion, I'd like to welcome Sheikh and say salam to Sheikh Murtada.
Wa alaikum salam, and thank you for having me.
Thanks for accepting the invitation, Sheikh. The question that we need to ask today is about the evolution theory. It has been asked that the genetic similarity that can be seen between human beings and chimpanzees can bring this idea to us that there is a relationship between these roots between the human beings and the animals like chimpanzees, that we, as we said, that the genetic studies shows that they are very similar to each other. Can it bring this idea of evolution theory at the board to say that bring the idea of evolution theory up to say that it can be also one reliable theory that can be looked at or it can be trusted. What is an Islamic perspective towards this issue? Is there any relationship between human beings and animals, and what does Islam say with regard to the evolution theory as well?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So this question tries to say that the genetic similarities between human beings and the monkeys, it's a reason to prove the evolution theory. First of all, let's be clear about this theory. Does Islam reject the evolution theory? Not necessarily. You know that we have the theory of creation, the fact that this generation of the human beings, they are temporal, meaning that it goes back to the creation of Adam alayhi salam, which is like between 10,000 or 15,000 years ago. The followers of evolution theory, they believe that some of them, they claim that the story mentioned in the Bible and the Quran about creation of Adam from a clay is wrong because of the fact that we can prove that human beings have been, developed during the history, and based on evolution theory, first of all, we have the monkeys, and then they are completed in form, and then finally they come to be human beings. Now, the point is that there is a middle way. So, it's been mentioned by some of the great Muslim scholars that Islam is not against the evolution theory. Islam doesn't prove that, neither reject that. How can we reconcile between the both? The point is that we can imagine that, during 1 million years, or less, more or less, monkeys have been developed and they have come to be a sort of human beings which lived, for example, 100 years ago. But then they have come to end. And 10,000 years ago or 15 years ago, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala creates a new generation of human beings which is not necessarily like that one, that human being, which was developed out of monkeys.
Mm-hmm.
So Adam alayhi salam is created by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, although we might have some things similar to human beings before that, out of evolution. So there is no contradiction between this evolution theory and the theory of creation.
Yeah.
And of course, when we refer to the books of tafsir and interpretation of the Quran, you see that some scholars, they have tried to bring some verses to reject the evolution theory. But at the same time, some have brought some verses of the Quran to prove the evolution theory. So my point is that the evolution theory is not against Islamic teachings and Islamic doctrines. We can believe in that and at the same time believe in the theory of creation of Adam alayhi salam. And interestingly, it's been mentioned that at least it is claimed that Darwin, who brought about this theory, he himself believed in God. Because, typically many people who try to believe in this idea, they also try to reject the concept of God and believe in a creator. But the one who brought this theory, he himself believed in God.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to take that into consideration. There is, if we believe in evolution theory, it doesn't mean that necessarily we need to reject the theory of creation as mentioned in the Quran. No, we can have both. The second point is that it is true that there is a kind of genetic similarities between human beings and some types of monkeys, but some scholars also have shown that there is a kind of genetic similarities between human being and the horse and the donkeys. So can we claim that it's been also
from the same generation?
Yeah,
from
evolution
the same
theory.
Tree.
So mere genetic similarity does not prove the fact that human beings is the developed form of the donkeys, of the monkeys. Then there is a question that those people who are against the evolution theory, they pose that, okay, if you believe in evolution theory, why has it stopped for many years, for many centuries? If monkeys were supposed to be developed gradually, why no monkey is turning into human being anymore during the last many centuries? And why there is no great difference in human beings, why human beings are not, developed anymore? The other main answer is the fact that although there are some similarities, genetic similarities between human beings and some types of monkeys, there are also great differences. For example, even those, the followers of evolution theory, they themselves, they have agreed that, the average height of human beings is more than that of the monkeys for 38%. When it comes to their weight, they are weightier than monkeys for 80%, and their longevity is 50% more than that of the monkeys. The brain of human beings is four times as the brain of the monkeys. There are great differences when it comes to, stomach and the digestive system. And it's been mentioned that, for example, only human being can touch the tips of four fingers with the tip of another finger. No monkey and no other animal can do that. When it comes to the face, in the face of human beings, we have 40 muscles that can show different states like smile, sadness, happiness, anger, and so on and so forth. But for the monkeys, it is only 12 muscles, and they cannot show all these states. It is only human beings who can think, ponder, develop the science, bring about new invention, even produce poetries and compose poetries, and so on and so forth. So with all these differences, we cannot say that only because of some similarities between genetic similarities, we can prove the evolution theory. Again, I repeat that we are not going to reject that. The point is that although there are similarities, but there are many, many, many great differences as well. It is only human being who can, for example, cook new foods for himself. Mm-hmm. And it's been also proved that we know that human beings can use different means to produce new other means, but when it comes to monkeys, it's been proved scientifically that only they can make differences in three things. And when it comes to training, they can only learn three or four phrases to use them for communication and interaction. And at the same time, they can only use three concepts or can do three activities at the same time. But we know that for the human beings, it's much greater than this. So again, I repeat, Islam is not against the evolution theory. Of course, some Muslim scholars, they believe that according to some verses of the Noble Book of Quran, the evolution theory is rejected. But mm-hmm. I believe that at least Islam can agree with that and can disagree with that. There is no, it's not a necessity for Islam to reject the evolution theory. Mm-hmm. The evolution theory can be accepted, and at the same time we can accept the theory of creation. When it comes to genetic similarities, as I mentioned, there is genetic similarities between human beings and some other animals, And second of all, although there are some similarities between human beings and some types of monkeys, but the point is that at the same time, there are many, many great differences that we cannot ignore.
Mm-hmm. So it means that even genetic similarities does not bring a strong proof or to prove the argument that
that's true.
There is a sort of, let's say, convergence between the theory of creation and the evolution theory. But at the same time, there is also no drastic and actually no clear-cut difference between the creation and evolution theory. If
that's
I'm
true.
Not saying. Okay. Then, many thanks, Sheikh, for your explanations, and you respected listeners for staying tuned and listening to the to this show. And we have been talking about the evolution theory and its acceptability by Islam or Islamic scholars, and it was answered that actually evolution theory is not rejected totally by Islam, and some Islamic scholars even accepted that, and the other hand, some Islamic researchers and even interpreters of the Holy Quran rejected that, and they said that they cannot find a strong argument in that. And but what was answered here, we understood that there is no contradiction, there is no clear-cut contradiction between the creation theory, which is proposed by Islam, and also the evolution theory. And on the other hand, the genetic similarity that is looked at in evolution theory cannot strengthen the argument to say that there is a total similarity between human beings and animals, specifically monkeys or chimpanzees, because we can also find some similarity between some genetic similarity between human beings and also donkeys and horses and other kinds of animals. So it does not necessarily bring any strong argument, any strong proof to strengthen the argument. Many thanks, brothers and sisters, for staying tuned and listening to IRB English Radio Q&A on Q&A Islamic Bliss from IRB English Radio.
لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن حب أهل البيت فرض عندنا حب أهل البيت فرض عندنا وبهذا الحب لنا شميحا
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
U.S. President Joe Biden might not be building a physical border wall, but he is continuing to expand an infrastructure designed to deter migrants from crossing into the United States. Though he has distanced himself from former President Donald Trump's immigration policy, the Biden administration's plan would see the U.S. government lean into its reliance on technology at the southern border with Mexico, where Customs and Border Protection, CBP, is currently expanding one of the most ambitious surveillance systems ever created. Stay with us for part one of a three-part article written by Will Lennon. The piece is titled U.S. Customs and Border Protection Plans Vast Expansion of Technology-Based Surveillance. The article has been taken from truthout.com website. The United States government plans to expand a program for monitoring the Mexico border through cutting-edge artificial intelligence technology. At the vanguard of the project is Anduril, a NERDIC technology firm with ties to Palantir. Delivery orders, statements of work, and contracts obtained by Shadow Proof help to illustrate the scope and potential outcomes of Anduril's work with U.S. Customs and Border Protection, CBP. The project, which involves migrant tracking artificial intelligence housed in surveillance towers and drones, clashes with President Joe Biden's rhetoric on immigration. Overall, Joe Biden's immigration plan reads like it was crafted in response to half a decade of building the wall, sloganeering. In addition to raising the ceiling on refugee admissions, creating a pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants, and closing a loophole that allowed Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, to operate in sanctuary cities, Joe Biden has pledged there will not be another foot of wall constructed. Biden might not be building a physical wall, but he's continuing to expand an infrastructure designed to deter migrants from crossing into the United States. Though he has distanced himself from former President Donald Trump's immigration policy, the Biden administration's plan would see the United States government lean into its reliance on technology at the southern border with Mexico, where CBP, Customs and Border Protection, is currently expanding one of the most ambitious surveillance systems ever created. Throughout 2021 and 2022, a series of surveillance towers will be installed in Texas and in California. Customs and Border Protection is in the process of more than doubling its use of the towers, which monitor the surroundings for miles and transmit intelligence to Customs and Border Protection and its Border Patrol subsidiary. The towers are linked to drones, and the data they collect feed into a powerful artificial intelligence system. Anduril Industries, the flagship company behind the new border surveillance project, is a hybrid. The California technology startup was founded by veterans of SpaceX, Facebook, and Oculus. It is the sort of place where executives speak in pop culture references and where workers scoot around on hoverboards. But it is also a company that aims to use its clout with the federal government to level up to a corporate defense titan like General Dynamics or Raytheon. Petra Molnar, a researcher and associate director at the Refugee Law Laboratory, works primarily on technology and refugee issues in Europe and Canada. But she sees parallels between conditions at the U.S.-Mexico border and those in the Mediterranean region, where migrants sometimes drown trying to cross into Europe. Petra Molnar said in an interview with Shadow Proof, "There's a lot of discretion given to decisions made at or around the border," adding, "When you're looking at this kind of opaque discretionary decision-making regime, It's ripe for new surveillance and technology that are making their way into that space with very little regulation and oversight. Anduril Industries typically competes with companies making weaponry like tanks and missiles, but its focus on surveillance technology still fits within a US paradigm that treats the border like a war zone. The militarization of the southern border in the modern era has been accompanied by similarly increasing militant rhetoric and strategy. For example, under former President Barack Obama, Customs and Border Protection's mission statement had the agency acting as America's front line and protecting the American public against the so-called terrorists. In a 2018 profile, an Anduril Industries executive told Wired that the company's border surveillance program helps you conceptualize what it would be like in Afghanistan, adding, "It's the same problem." Soon after Anduril Industries was officially incorporated in 2017, Donald Trump used the language of war to describe conditions at the U.S.-Mexico border. Trump called a caravan of migrants heading to the United States from Central America an invasion and deployed thousands of troops to the southern border with Mexico throughout his presidency. Anduril Industries higher-ups tend to talk more about their work for the U.S. military than they do their projects at the border. However, according to USAspending.org, Anduril Industries' most lucrative contracts are with the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, their Customs and Border Protection Agency's parent agency. As early as 2018, Anduril Industries had pilot border security programs running in the El Paso and San Diego metropolitan areas. Emails obtained from a Freedom of Information Act request show that an Anduril Industries representative scheduled a technology demonstration with the San Diego Police Department in April of 2019. And a work order indicates Department of Homeland Security continues to request support for the San Diego sector legacy towers. Trey Stevens, one of the venture capitalists who helped get Anduril Industries off the ground, said he hoped to see the company become the next Palantir. Palantir is a technology company founded by Peter Thiel that specializes in netting contracts from the military, from the Department of Homeland Security, and from other government agencies. ICE's Falcon and investigative case management system were developed by Palantir. Falcon is a database for tracking immigrants and transnational crime. ICM gives ICE access to data on immigrant targets, including home address and biometrics, and allows them to see data from other agencies, including the Drug Enforcement Agency and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI. If Anduril Industries really does aim to become the next Palantir, border security is a smart place to start. Well, dear listeners, that was the first part of Will Lennon's article, U.S. Customs and Border Protection Plans Vast Expansion of Technology-Based Surveillance. Tune in tomorrow for the second part of this three-part series.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars from IRIB English Radio. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is the program Viewpoints. With me in the studio are two guest speakers for today's discussion, Brother Ali Alavian and Brother Suhail, two experts from the Islamic House of Qom. Brother Ali, assalamu alaikum, brother. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam. Thank you very much.
And Brother Suhail, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaikum assalam.
So this is the first time we have Brother Suhail in a program. We hope we benefit from his presence in this series of the program Viewpoints. We are passing live before the months of Ramadan. So Brother Mahmoud, the producer of this program, decided to dedicate this series to fasting and the holy months of Ramadan as tackled by Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. So all our surroundings, especially nowadays, with all these cell phones in our hands and these social networks and all these, you know, clips coming and going, are distracting us from the main path of concentrating on divinity and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I think this month of fasting is also kind of abandoning yourself from all the surroundings around yourself. Is it mushtahiyat, they say?
Inclinations or your desires.
Yeah, the desired ones around you. Right. So leaving the desired ones beside and only being focused on the way towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
There is a point that I wanted to mention if I think this some extent related to the topic that we are discussing. Look, brother, dhikr or remembrance of God has been categorized in three forms. Dhikrul love, that is by word. Dhikrul qalb, that is by heart. And dhikrul amal, what is by, done by practice. And there are different levels. It starts from love, and then it goes to
heart.
First it starts with love, and then goes to amal, and then it comes to the heart.
Heart, okay.
And we have, we can understand from the text and actually the context of a hadith that the most important kind of dhikr is dhikrul qalb. That is heart, remembering Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala with heart. You see how important this...
Sorry, heart here resembles heart. Spirit?
Spirit, yeah.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay.
So how important it is that we can see all these three levels of dhikr in salat, in prayers. Like, for example, we recite something.
Yes.
Then actually we practice something while praying.
Yes.
And then the outcome of it is something in our heart. Mm-hmm. The joy and actually the spiritual status that we have after saying prayer actually it shows itself. And this relation, this dhikrul qalb is the most important
spiritual
thing. That you... your whole soul, your whole heart is connected to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But it's very interesting that in fasting and Saum, the month of Ramadan, there is no other two forms of dhikr. There is no dhikr al-laf and there is no dhikr al-amal. The only thing is dhikr al-qalb. Because we just leave something, we do not do we practice anything. We just leave some actions.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no dhikr al-laf for Sauming. For Saum,
so doing with undoing something.
Yeah. Okay. So the how important it is that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala left it for himself exclusively to do the highest level of dhikr and remembrance of God in the holy month of Ramadan.
Very good, brother.
That's why that it starts from a breeze in the month of Rajab and then slowly it becomes a wind in the holy month of Sha'ban and then it will become a storm in the sense that a mu'min actually wants to become funny in the existence
a
of
a wind
God.
Of change inside a spiritual perfection you mean
I think one of the point he made yes, very good point that he made about leaving out the things right
yes
what comes to mind is fasting is one of the ibadah where it's very highly unlikely to show off. Basically, you keep away from riya.
Yes,
You don't show off because nobody knows you are fasting.
Yes,
you are doing it for purely for the sake of Allah Subhanahu Wa Taala. You don't touch upon the things which usually you do.
Okay,
right, and this is inside you. You are always in the presence of Allah Subhanahu Wa Taala. You feel that presence because your day-to-day activities which you used to do. Now you are not doing it. Okay. All the time, you know, your mind is focused. Mm-hmm. That I'm not doing it for the sake of Allah and not for anything else. There is no show off, and that makes it very pure.
Anatis is recommended fasting in a way that not only your belly is fasting, but also your tongue, your eyes, your ears, and everything, your body. And especially in today's world, you know, upon the new discoveries that have been made, the signals around us, from the satellite ones up to the food that we eat, have their own asar-e vaz'i or influence and effects on our body. Okay? So, and according to the researches that have been done, leaving them aside will help you become a healthier body, okay? Mm-hmm. This is what is known as intermittent fasting in the Western world for 5-6 days. They do that, they recover their body, and after that they start their routine life. And I think this has been very beautifully put inside the philosophy of fasting, but fasting not only in terms of being hungry, but looking for a kind of a spiritual perfection, as you, Brother Ali, said, that at the end of the month, after 30 days, we can say consecutive fasting, you can reach to a type of light and enlightenment inside your soul. And if you did not so...
That's why...
You were not successful, is it?
Sorry?
If you cannot feel that kind of light and calmness inside yourself, that hunger has no benefit.
All human beings, all those who actually are actually practicing fasting or so, they will be benefited from the grace and this banquet. But the extent of receiving and gaining, it depends on the receivers that we have inside ourselves. Mm-hmm. Actually, I wanted to add a point to your explanation. That's why that we have been told that istainu bis sabr was salah. Sabr actually, or patience, is something that comes from fasting. Look, in fasting, we need just to refrain from some issues. Unlike the needs of the body, when we want to, for example, remedy a sickness, we are told to, for example, or we are recommended to, for example, take some medicines.
Yes.
But for spiritual diseases, we need just to leave. Not to take,
okay.
to leave some action.
Yes.
So this is the difference. That's why even if we want to kapha, if the body is more strong, or the soul, definitely soul.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a little bit not easy to be understood and digested for us.
It's more difficult. That's
if we want to have a fat soul. In the sense that, for example, a strong soul to be a good servant of God. Mm-hmm. So you cannot have, actually, you do not need to take too much attention to your body. But it does not mean that you leave your body. No. Your body needs to the extent that it requires for a healthy body.
A nice contradiction exists over here in your wording, and that is you are hungry, you leave everything aside, but you become fatter in terms of a spiritual perfection. That was very nice. Brother Sohail, that's right. You are getting fatter in terms of a spiritual perfection, but you are not eating anything. You are not enjoying your life, but you are becoming stronger and stronger every day. It seems there is a contradiction here, but it is a beautiful one.
Well, I feel this part of enjoyment, we have to, you know, define it well. The enjoyment, you know, is very relative term. There are certain momentary enjoyment which comes out of worldly desires that is arises, you know. And when you fulfill those desires, or when you fulfill that
shortcomings,
emptiness. When you fulfill that emptiness, then you know you become momentarily happy, or you know you feel pleasure, right? So essentially is the, you know, the root of it is emptiness.
Yes.
Right? Otherwise there is no stand of those pleasure.
Yes.
You know, it's not independent pleasure.
Okay.
When certain individual is walking on the path of spirituality, he can start feeling those pleasures, the divine pleasure.
Yes.
Or the real pleasure out of those activities.
Okay.
And that particular path. And that pleasure is very sweet.
Yes.
That pleasure is
permanent.
Everlasting. Yeah, it's not momentary.
Okay.
He also, when Rever mentions that, you know, the pleasure that you go behind in a haram way, unlawful way, in you know, following your worldly desires, will be manifested as a hellfire in thereafter.
Okay.
How does it manifest in a hellfire? Like, for an example, it comes to mind that it looks like kind of a laughter of a shaitan, right? Apparently, it's a laughter, but nobody, you know, if you think deeply about it, nobody likes it.
Okay.
It's a laughter of shaitan that is a pleasure of this world.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. But we do not say this in order to leave the world. I mean, it is not recommending our dear listeners to leave the world. But no, you can use the world in an absolute halal way, which is allowed by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But during the holy month of Ramadan, we can say we are banned because of our spiritual perfection. And this what has been ordered by Allah.
Exactly. Like, you know, there is a point which Rehber mentions on this topic. Usually, the path of Shaitan goes through this worldly and carnal desires, right? Mushtahiyat, is it called?
Yes.
It goes through that path. But it doesn't mean that, you know, there is a necessary relationship between the worldly desires and going away from Allah.
That's right.
It doesn't mean exactly. Like, you know, okay. if you are under control, I mean, your desires are under control of you, then it's fine. Right? If it goes out of your control, then it's kind of a mad dog, mm-hmm. which will take you anywhere, you know, mm-hmm. which will harm you in a bad way. Otherwise, if it is under your control, it's a pure energy that you can use for your making the world better and your hereafter also better.
That's right. Let's keep everything under control in the holy month of Ramadan, which is really difficult, you know. We are accustomed to a different type of lifestyle during the year. All of a sudden, you know, you got to go into the holy month of Ramadan. You want to... I think in the past, it was easier, Brother Ali, wasn't it? The holy months of Ramadan, the distractions were less, isn't it?
Very true. Even based on the statistics, not only in our country, in other countries I have seen during the holy month of Ramadan, actually, even the rate of crimes...
Oh.
Actually, too much less.
Okay.
It means that even those who are not fasting, to some extent, they in this month, the nature of, mm-hmm. or let's say, the breeze that comes in this month, actually, is human making. Actually, is working with construction of the structure of the people. For their worldly life.
Okay.
So it means even the breeze that comes, even the time that these days are actually locate in, the timing is actually a holy and sacred timing.
Yes.
And actually it has its own influence on the people.
Yes.
So a person who is not practicing fasting, what is the reason that, for example, if he was a criminal at the other month,
mm-hmm.
so his crimes actually become less in this month.
Inshallah.
The blessings of this month are too much that we need to be thankful to God that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gave us this honor to be among those who are practicing.
Okay, thank you very much, Brother Ali Alavian and Brother Suhail, for your presence in the program Viewpoints. And also, dear listeners, do not forget us in your prayers and supplications during this holy month of Ramadan, during the Sahar time, at the time of dawn, when breaking your fast. Keep us in your prayers, brothers. At the Call of Islam Radio, IRIB English Radio. You can visit our website for more information on this program, other episodes of our Ramadani programs in this holy month of Ramadan at parstory.com/Call of Islam page. Also, our YouTube channel, Call of Islam Radio. The another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.